It is Saturday, March 22nd, 2008, 10:06 a.m. on the Central Coast of California. Today on Geek Speak, the week in geek news, and old computers changing lives in Guatemala. The bandwidth for geekspeak.org is provided by GNI, gnihosting.com. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. Today, we are covering Next Step Recycling in Eugene, Oregon, Partners in Solidarity in Guatemala, and we have the founder of Partners in Solidarity waiting from Nicaragua. So we have kind of an international show today, and there will be technical difficulties due to that, of course. During the second half, you're welcome to join the conversation, ask our guests information and questions about recycling and about reuse of computers. The phone numbers to do that are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. And I'll give out that contact information again when I invite your participation in about a half an hour. If you're familiar with our topic and you want to ask us a question right now, please feel free to go to geekspeak.org. You can participate in the forums if you'd like to make an account, or you can just send us an email through our contact form. Lots of ways to participate. Speaking of participation, I want to thank everyone for participating in the pledge drive. Last week, we did meet our numbers during the Geek Speak Hour, and I really appreciate that, even though there were technical difficulties. Actually, in fact, we could only take one call at a time last week due to interconnection trunk issues, some mumbo-jumbo about that, and maybe we'll have a future show about phone technology to find out why that happened. Geek Speak on KOSP is supported by Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 SoCal Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. This is Geek Speak. My name's Lyle Troxell. In the air with me are geeks. Ben Jaffe, student and geek. Hi, Ben.
Hi, Lyle.
You might be more geeky than me. I couldn't bring your mic up in time. Sorry about that. So, actually, technically, last night you graduated with your bachelor's.
Yes, I graduated. I guess I'm not sure if that's actually if it was actually at 10 o'clock exactly, or if it was when I finished my last final. But yeah, theater arts degree.
Isn't it more like when your teachers actually submit your grades and actually?
I guess that's more like it. Yeah.
So you're officially a thespian, a professional thespian, or at least a degreed thespian.
You can call me that if you want to.
I want to call you that all the time. All right, and now we have. We have also Ryder Brooks, support engineer at Sun Microsystems.
Hi, Lyle.
Hi. How are you doing?
I'm doing great.
Good, good. You didn't drink too much that last night?
Nope.
All right. That's good.
It was Lyle's birthday.
It was my birthday party last night, yeah. I turned 34 and had a wonderful time and got geeky gifts and good family and friends and wonderful time. Thank you all for participating in that. Now, on with the geek news.
Yes.
I will start with Mr. Jaffe.
All right. My news story is about donotreply.com. And the guy who owns it, this guy named Chet Falizek, I butchered that. But anyway, he owns the URL donotreply.com, which means that he gets millions of emails per week misdirected, mostly spam, but some to like executives at Fortune 500 companies and bank customers and government employees and all kinds of important people. Because when... A lot of times when companies send out emails to their customers, they'll send them out using, you know, like a reply to at donotreply.com.
Yeah.
And so when, if you decide to reply anyway, if you don't see that, then your emails will land in this guy Chet's inbox.
What does Chet do with all this massive amounts of information?
Now, that's interesting. Most of it he just ignores, but the most interesting ones he actually posts online in a blog. And for a nominal fee, whatever company's information is revealed on his blog can take them down by making a donation to the Humane Society, the local Humane Society. So it's kind of interesting.
What do you mean take them down to local Humane Society? What do you
mean? Well, embarrassing things that some companies might not want to have published on the internet.
Exactly.
So he gives them the opportunity to have it removed. So apparently he's collected about $5,000.
He's collected $5,000?
Well, as a nominal fee to have people remove it from his blog.
Collectively, yeah. Send up for the local dog
people.
Pounds. Yeah, exactly.
Okay, now why is this news? Just because it's kind of cool and geeky?
I thought it was pretty cool that someone owns DoNotReply.com, because I was reading about things like there's Example.com, and there's, I think there are four of them that are reserved that you just cannot buy. No one can buy because they're reserved. And I think that DoNotReply.com would be one of those. But apparently this guy bought it in 2000.
One can't anyone own?
I can't remember all four of them, but one of them is example.com.
Right, so you can use example.com whenever you want to have a fake domain name. Okay,
yeah,
that's good.
Exactly.
So people should change their spamming systems, whatever, to say do not reply at example.com.
Well, I guess
that
so.
That would do it, right?
Well, I mean, a lot of companies do not reply at apple.com or do not reply at microsoft.com.
You should use your own domain, ideally.
Exactly, because that way, if someone sends you back some information about their bank account, for example, then that information doesn't get posted, you know?
Right.
But yeah, so I just found that one pretty interesting, the fact that someone owns that.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Jaffe, for that wonderful news story. Don't reply. And also, is the other thing.
Yeah, if it says do not reply, don't reply.
Don't send confidential
They're not gonna read
stuff
it.
Over email unless you encrypt it.
That's a good point. And, of course, no one actually
What I thought was interesting is that people have actually threatened to sue this guy because he's reading their email. Does he own it because it was sent to him on his domain at that point? Who owns it?
Sure.
Yeah.
You know, I have, Troxel.com is my domain name, so it's pretty easy to figure out what my other email address is. And of course, Trox.com there's a corporation called Trox Communications, and they're Trox or something like that. I used to get their email forever because I had this whole I catch anything that was sent, so I'd get all these messages, and I'd start forwarding them, and I'd get some upset, and finally I was like, you know what? I'll just stop accepting all messages. So I only accept a few email messages, and that was a good solution for it. Okay, next news story. Writer.
Right. Okay, so I came across a very interesting technology that's pretty much ready for production. A company called Thorn Microtechnologies has come out with a solid-state fan for cooling CPUs, transistors, whatever. They have an actual prototype right now that's 15 millimeter by 15 millimeter. And it's a solid state. And what I mean by that is it's basically a fan that has no moving parts and generates an air current to cool devices like CPUs.
Cool.
And what's cool about it is it's basically a series of wires, and surrounding it is kind of a curved plate. And it's basically an ionizer, and it creates what they call a plasma discharge.
That sounds cool.
Yeah. Basically, these are little wires that are basically generating plasma gas. So can you imagine, running plasma gas in your computer or something? And it's basically creating an intense electrical current that sends ions across one side to the other side and basically impacts the air molecules and generates a current. An air current,
airflow,
a pressure, head, and then
sure.
That creates airflow, which they call a Corona discharge.
And is this to remove the need for a fan?
This is basically for creating a silent fan that's not mechanical. It's solid state, there's no moving parts.
Oh, okay, and so it's ionized. It's not
it's ionized.
The heating element.
It's fundamentally the same technology that you see at like these ionized air purifiers.
Yeah,
so
the
downside is it does create a little bit of ozone. So, don't be
right,
sniffing it.
Well, ozone smells fun.
Well, it's toxic.
Oh, yeah, there's that.
I wouldn't
say
that.
It's toxic. You just can't really use it to support life. Now, this thing that would cause this flow, it's very similar to how those little tiny homemade helicopter floating devices work, where you have an airflow that goes across. Have you ever seen those?
No.
I'll show these things. There's a really cool levitating thing you can do.
Yeah.
Okay, so...
But the cool thing about this is
are
that...
Are they in market?
They expect it to go into market next year. And what's really cool about this is that they project that they can actually do built-in self-cooling silicon.
Nice.
By embedding this into CPU.
Because
they're so small. You're talking... basically, it's of if you give that size, for example, it is one-fourth the size of a mechanical fan producing four times the airflow.
Whoa. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Now,
wow. I mean, the example that they have is like almost 3 meters per second of airflow.
I didn't know those things were that powerful, because I remember the
there's a video you can look at it
back in the late 90s or whatever that came out, and it didn't produce very much flow at all. It was just like
I came across a video that actually illustrates this in effect, and it's pretty impressive if you like that.
How much ozone's being created?
I don't know.
I mean, is it going to be?
I don't think it's a lot.
Vent your computer outside.
More of concern to me is what kind of electromagnetic field this thing's generating, and is that going to cause any interference to computers? Parts?
You know, no CRTs.
Is it shielded?
Sure.
Is it
things like that? I don't think that's going to be much of an issue, because you're talking about we'll get into the details.
Speakers that might be interesting. we know how much you like cell phones.
Yeah, but very cool. I mean, I think it works better on a smaller scale due to the amount of pressure that it can generate, for airflow. Hmm. I think as it scales larger, it probably doesn't work as well. But it'd be great for laptops and cell phones and things to really ramp up CPU speeds and be able to deal with the heat better.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much for the news, both of you. Appreciate
sure.
it. Ben and Ryder. You're listening to Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air with me are Ben and Ryder, and we just did the Geek News. We're now going to start talking about computers being reused. There's a lot of talk about recycling. Computers in the U.S. are thrown away at an alarming rate, while in developing countries, there are not enough computers to go around. Next Step Recycling in Eugene, Oregon, is helping to change that by shipping containers full of usable computers to Guatemala, where partners in Solidarity take them to install them to schools. So reusing computers is helping bridge the gap, the technical gap, in digital divide, if you will. And that's what the show is about. And we have our very own ex-technical support and trainer person here at KUSP, Josh Weiss from Guatemala. Josh, thank you for joining us.
Good morning, Lyle. How's it going?
Quite well, and you're nice and clear.
And good morning, Santa Cruz.
Thank you. We also have Lorraine Kerwood, who is the executive director of Next Step Recycling out in Eugene, Oregon. Good morning, Lorraine.
Hey, good morning, fellas.
So, Josh, you go to Guatemala why do you first go to Guatemala?
I came to Guatemala to learn Spanish, and I just to take a little break from the United States and wasn't sure exactly what I was going to end up doing down here. But as it turned out, I read an article in a newspaper, in an English language newspaper down here, written by Matthew Rutman, who founded the organization Partners in Solidarity, and spoke about the work that they were doing getting these computers into local schools, into local rural schools, and work really interested in me.
And so you started working with Matthew?
Well, so I contacted him, and I found out that there was a number of things we can do. And we first started out by teaching some classes to local teachers so that they could help teach the children who were using these donated computers.
Now, give me a feel for what Guatemala feels like. Are there a lot of computers in the cities? Is it a very technically rich environment?
What I would say is that most of the computers you see in the cities down here, you see in internet cafes, and there's a lot of internet cafes. So, I mean, like, for example, on my street, there's probably 4 internet cafes I could walk to within 30 seconds. Because people don't have internet in their house very often, so people are using computers and using internet more on the street and in public than they are in their houses.
But this is in the city where you can actually walk to a coffee shop.
Right. I mean, it's definitely very accessible, and it ends up costing anywhere between 25 and 50 cents an hour to use the internet, which for us is cheap, but it's not that cheap down here.
Okay. Now, what about in the rural communities? I'm assuming that's where you are with the schools.
Right. So what happens in the rural communities is usually you'll have one sort of central municipal district, and in there you might have 2 or 3 internet cafes. But once you jump out to where these schools are, there's pretty much no computers and no internet, because they're going to be maybe a 20-minute, 15-minute bus ride from this area, this municipal area. So where these kids are living around their schools, there's pretty much no wiring, no connection, and they're the only chance they really have of getting good access to a computer is if their school provides it.
Okay, now, and what about the college level in Guatemala if you're going to go to, like, a state-run type university? Computers?
I'm going to assume they do have better access to technology, but the interesting thing is that to get into those state-run universities, you first have to be trained to use a computer. So if you're from a rural area where access is not provided to computers, it makes it that much harder to get to the institution that will provide you with the computer later on down the line.
And that's the real and that's the real digital divide in Guatemala between the rural communities where they're never going to use a keyboard unless the school has one, to university where if they want to go to university, they have to have that skill. And that's where Partners in Solidarity comes in to kind of train set up. Okay, well, so Matthew's going to be joining us, Matthew Rutman, who's the founder of Partners in Solidarity. He's going to join us in about 10 minutes or so from Nicaragua, where he's doing a different project. But let's go ahead and talk to Lorraine Kerwood, because, Lorraine, you've been pulling computers together, and give me a little bit of a history of Next Step.
Well, Next Step has a lovely grassroots story. I started it back in 2000, pretty much out of my own need. I was terrified of computers and had to use one to go back to college. And so I ended up going on the internet and learning all about how to upgrade and modify and make those old boxes do what they're not expected to do. Through the internet, I found some local geeks, and we started building boxes that we'd either buy at thrift stores or pick out of the trash bins and refurbish. And by the time we had a nice stockpile going and I was proficient at it, I started distributing them to disenfranchised folks that I was meeting as a child welfare worker. So I started giving them away to kids in foster care and with persons with disabilities and underfunded schools and nonprofits. After we all were realizing that we couldn't do two full-time jobs, I quit my day job and looked into how to create a community-based, community-run refurbishing facility. And within a few months of moving out of my mother-in-law's garage into a real-life warehouse, we had 25 volunteers.
Wow.
We had, 2,900 square foot of space, open office hours so people could drop off stuff, anytime we were open. And within the next month or so, so about 4 months in, we realized that there was no way that we couldn't open a recycling facility along with the refurbishing facility. So we researched that, figured out how to do that, got some support from our landlord, and was able to open a recycling facility. Mm-hmm. And now we have a multi-faceted program where we offer job and social skills training to folks that are either considered unemployable, or they've never been employed, or they just need a hand. And after 30 hours of education, whether it's how to take something apart or how to rebuild it, we gift them a computer. And we also have the placement program where we take referrals from social service agencies and gift that population computers. And we have the international program where we place computers overseas. We've placed in about 20 different international communities, with our main focus being the highlands of Quetzaltenango in Guatemala.
Which is the partnership with Partners in Solidarity.
Yeah, actually, yeah. Partners in Solidarity, Matthew began the program. He and I were both University of Oregon alumni, and I read about him, and he was shipping down school supplies and medical supplies and some computers he got in California, and I said, hey, I've got computers.
Yeah.
So we hooked up, and we've been shipping computers to Guatemala for 6 years now.
Okay, I want to give some numbers to kind of get a place of how things are going. And you sent me a great email, and I'll just read that. You've placed over 14,000 computers.
Mm-hmm.
You've recycled over 8 million pounds of e-waste. And
right.
You've sold over 250,000 different refurbished electronic items. I assume that you do toasters and refrigerators and anything that possibly could be reused.
Yeah, we don't do refrigerators, but we do just about anything else electronic.
Stereos and cell phones and PDAs.
Yeah.
And that, so,
printers and cameras and iPods, anything that plugs in or runs on batteries.
Are most of the people that are refurbishing these, like let's say I took and sent you an old iPod that was broken, do you have a group of people that can actually open up an iPod and repair it and replace the battery and that kind of thing? Or what level of work do you do?
Yeah, we have, we're completely blessed to have a crew of folks, whether they're our staff or our volunteers, who just love fussing with this stuff. And
true geeks.
And we do have a couple of staff who are able to refurbish, you know, the higher-end material. We also have a previous board member who offers us machine-level repairs for the very newest model of material that comes in. You know, he's able to repair laptops that have had Coke spilled on them, or
sure.
or the one that he was telling me about where he pulled out the hard drive and there was a scorpion underneath it, you know, those kinds of things. He's able to do board-level repair and has helped us out many times. But we have a couple of volunteers who are, they kind of specialize in certain machine areas, and then we also have staff that certainly can handle those iPods and those MP3 players and a variety of, you know,
In your note, you say you've recycled over 8 million pounds of e-waste, but sold over 250,000 and placed or donated 14,000 items. We're talking about a lot of items that didn't go into the waste cycle. Do you talk a bit about what it's like to actually strip down a computer and use the part, the raw materials versus reusing the machine?
Yeah, we did a little data study, and we've actually been able to reuse 68% of the material that comes through our doors.
Nice.
And which is extraordinary considering the volume and the variety of the materials. What we do with, let's just take the computer. If we get a computer in that doesn't meet our threshold for refurbishment, which is a P3 800 megahertz and above, or a Mac G3, we will do what we call mining, and we'll take out anything that we feel could be reused in another machine, or maybe possibly sold in our reuse store. And then the rest of the material we dismantle to a certain level, and that goes into these gigantic cardboard boxes. And then we're able to resell that scrap material, which helps keeps our doors open. And then that goes to manufacturers where they can use that material to make something new. What's wonderful about that is that all that gold and aluminum and copper and, doesn't have to be mined. It can be reused above ground, of course, which makes it less.
So it's still better than in getting new materials. The recycling is still much better than that. Yeah,
the EPA did the UN did a study on how much raw materials it takes to make one computer setup, which is a computer, CRT monitor, keyboard, and a mouse. And it's 108 tons of virgin material is needed to make that machine.
Wow.
Which, to me, is extraordinary. And if we reuse a computer, we save the equivalent energy expenditure of taking a half a car off the road for a year. So that's pretty extraordinary to me.
Wow, very good work. I'm really impressed. How many staff members do you have, and how many volunteers are involved with you?
We have such a wonderful mix. Right now we have about 22 paid employees.
Whoa.
We have 14 master recyclers. They're folks that have gone through a county training to get skills in all types of recycling, but they have found their niche with us. And they might be the ones who offer guidance with hazardous waste handling, or they might run a particular program. Like we have a master recycler who handles the television and monitor dismantling. And then we have another one who handles our specific specialized printers and testing those.
Right.
So we have that group of folks. And then we have about 8 or 9 people who volunteer anywhere from 5 to 40 hours a week of their time.
Wow.
We call them volunteer staff. And then in the mix of everything, we have about 100 people who come through our doors throughout the month who might be just someone who's retired and they want to hang out with us and help us.
Right, and they're kind of involved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or they're the folks that are coming for job and social skills training. We also work specifically with 6 or 7 different high school special ed life training classes. Mm-hmm. So folks like me who might have gotten a label of autistic or developmentally delayed or a variety of things like that, can come to us, and we will give them real-life job skills training.
That's great. What a wonderful organization. We are talking with Laureen Kerwood. She's the executive director of Next Step Recycling out in Eugene, Oregon, and they do take shipments of stuff if you want to ship stuff to them. And they're also looking at other ways to grow the business so that it comes to multiple communities, like including a potential opening of a kind of a franchise in Florida to be a little closer to Central America, which was where most of their computers get placed. In a few minutes, we're going to be inviting Matthew Ruttman to join us. You are welcome also to join us. So, Laureen, I'll go ahead and I'll pipe you down and let you call up Matthew, okay?
Okay.
All right, talk to you in just a second. You're listening to Geek Speak. Geek Speak is supported by Henry J. Ramirez, DDS in Santa Cruz, specializing in cosmetic and family dentistry, using digital technology for less radiation, and offering one-appointment crowns and veneers. For appointments and more information, 423-2447. We're going to get right back on the topic in just a minute about recycling and e-waste and reusing computers and bridging the digital divide in Central America. Monday morning on Talk of the Bay, a theoretical physicist searches for the universal law of life. Physicist Jeffrey West talks to Robert Pauli about simple mathematical rules that may explain everything from the length of our lives to the health of our cities. Monday morning at 10 a.m. on Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP. We are inviting your calls with questions and comments about recycling and reusing computers. We're going to stick to topic today. The numbers to join us are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Of course, you can use the internet 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Just go to geekspeak.org. You can participate in our forums or send us an email, whatever you prefer. Stay with KUSP for Castle Cottage this morning at 11 a.m. on Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air with me is Ryder Brooks. Hi, Ryder.
Hi.
Still there listening.
Still here. Yeah.
Ben Jaffe's left on a camping trip. We also have Josh Weiss, who's a Geek Speak guy from way back, worked at the station here, and he is actually in Guatemala working on getting these computers into the home, and more about that in just a second. Geek Speak is supported by Business with Pleasure, a full-service business center in Scotts Valley, offering computer rentals, printing, design, shipping, delivered office supplies, notary public, and more. Information is online at businesswithpleasure.com. Hello, Matthew and Lorraine and Josh. Welcome back.
Hello.
Thanks.
Matthew, you're working on a different project right now in Nicaragua. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much for joining us. So you've been going to Guatemala for about 8 years. And how did you get involved in putting computers in schools?
I came to Guatemala in 2000, actually, to do some volunteering and got involved in some different projects there. And one of them, I was going to be working in a small community and was invited by a committee of parents trying to get a school built in a community, buy land and build a school. And that kind of started my relationship and my love with Guatemala. Worked with them for 6 months.
You know what, Matthew, I'm so sorry. We're having a lot of trouble with sound. I can barely understand you, and if I can understand you, most people listening without headphones are having a lot of difficulty. So we're going to have to simplify something. I want to make sure that all of you have your phones up to your heads and are not using speakerphones, and then we're going to give it a shot, and if not, we're going to have to say goodbye to Josh, maybe thinking it might be that. So, Matthew, go on. I'm sorry. So you go on with your story.
Okay. Well, yeah, the story was that going down and getting involved with this community to help get a school built was what introduced me to Guatemala, introduced me to rural Guatemalans, indigenous Quiché Mayans, and just being a part of their process and their struggle to get a school built in their community just made me fall in love with Guatemala.
And you were first focused on like building the school, like as in plumbing and walls and just very standard.
Raising funds to actually purchase the land and then get the school built.
Wow.
So I was working with a council of parents and teachers and community leaders to do these fundraising and write grants, and so that's what turned me on to Guatemala. And as far as education projects, that's been my passion for years, and I'm a teacher in the States, and I've been working with kids for the last almost 15 years now in various forms. So education's always been my passion, and that's what brought me to the project initially. I was community to try to get a school building. And I could go on. Can you still hear me well?
Yeah, we're doing pretty well now.
So that morphed into, to me, returning back to the state, running out of money, getting involved in some work to raise some more money, and then coming up with this idea to figure out a way to get our trash, which we call trash in the States, like chalkboards, chairs, computers, bicycles, medical equipment, supplies, things of that sort that literally we were throwing into the waste stream. And so I got this idea to actually get a container, a shipping container, to fill all these things that we were throwing away. So I saw all these different schools and communities that didn't have chairs to sit on in their schools, you know, didn't have pencils to write with, you know, and there were so many needs. And so I started organizing the project, and that's kind of how Lorraine and I got connected, because at the same time she was starting to, you know, work on fixing up old computers in her garage to give that to some of the kids that she was working with, which you probably heard about. And she heard about me and my project, and she actually contacted me. Hey, I've got some computers that, you know, you're interested in taking to Guatemala. And that was kind of how it first began, taking these little Macintosh computers, along with all these other things, you know, chalkboards, chairs, bicycles, medical supplies. But the thing that seemed to be the most effective piece of the project was the computers and creating these computer labs in the schools. And so each year we started bringing down more and more computers until eventually we got to this point, also because of Next Step Recycling's growth, where we actually had access to decent machines and people who could refurbish them, load them with, you know, Spanish operating systems and software. So we had things that could work. And then that morphed into a community project, which I don't know if Josh had a chance to speak about, or Lorraine as well.
You can go ahead.
Yeah, well, John,
you can give that information.
About that.
Yeah, go ahead.
Just really quick, the other piece of our project that I think is really special is that we're setting up these computer labs in rural schools, indigenous K'iche communities, where they're not getting them. They're not getting computers, and there really isn't much of a plan for them ever to get them. So that's a great piece of getting access to technology, which is really a bridge to higher learning, because it's a prerequisite to get to university. It'll also give them access to higher jobs. But the other piece, and I think that's equally as important, is we've teamed up with a Guatemalan NGO directed by an amazing woman named Maria Antonieta, who's also an indigenous K'iche woman. And she's created this model where the project is actually a community project. So in order for a community to get a computer lab, we're not just giving out computers to them. Mm-hmm. They actually have a huge list of requisites they have to do, which involves forming a security committee, forming a maintenance committee, sometimes building an extra building, wiring it with electricity, putting security bars on all the windows, putting locks and doors to make it so it's a secure setup, and then signing formal legal agreements that say that they are in charge of these computers, and if anything happens, they have to replace them. So if they get stolen, broken, things like that, they're in charge.
And there's a lot of
communities actually have to come together, a whole bunch of different meetings. Some schools have people spending the night, every single night, in the computer lab to make sure that the computers are safe, because security is a huge issue in Guatemala.
And this is a really important aspect, I think, of doing anything where you're changing the community. You have to have community buy-in, or it's not going to work.
And then they put them in the schools. They could literally take them out of the schools if they so desire at some point. So the government is not involved. The Ministry of Education supports the project. But they're not in charge of it, nor do they own the computers. The people own the computers of the community, which makes it extra special. And the labs are open oftentimes on weekends. And so adults that want to learn computers have access to them as well.
That's wonderful. I really think that's it's a great, I was trying to say while you were speaking, but it's a great way to make a community engage in the project, making them responsible for it. I definitely like that aspect. How many communities have you put schools into?
How many communities have computer labs, that you ask?
Sure.
Yeah, well, there's 30 right now that have labs. And then we have another container that's coming in August, and another 30 schools will receive them as well. And we also not only place them in computers, but we're also placing them in NGOs, so non-government organizations, mostly national, like Guatemalan NGOs. We're getting computers to them as well, so they have use of computers in their offices that help them do their work better and get connected to the world.
Great. Well, we are talking with the founder of Partners in Solidarity. He's actually in Nicaragua, but the Partners in Solidarity is mostly in Guatemala, and that is Matthew Ruttman. And, of course, we're doing a lot of technical hops to get four different areas connected at once. We also have Laureen Kerwood. She is the executive director of Next Step Recycling. You can get links to Next Step Recycling and photos of Partners in Solidarity all on our GeekSpeak website, geekspeak.org. Today's show is March 22nd, 2008. We also have Josh Weiss, and Josh is actually in Guatemala now helping communities set up these places. And Josh, your feeling on these schools, there's a great photograph on our website right now of one of the schools, a whole bunch of old CRT monitors and stuff. But when you get these computers, do they have operating systems, and how do you work with that, and how do you, is it all Spanish operating systems? How do you deal with that aspect?
Well, what happens actually is that the computers come from the states, from Next Step, with operating systems, usually Windows 98 or Windows 2000, depending on the context of capacity of the computer. Because Microsoft actually does not allow computers to leave the United States without a functional operating system.
Wait, who doesn't allow that? Well,
that's actually not correct information, if I could.
Yeah, go ahead.
We're a Microsoft authorized refurbisher, and we have a relationship with Microsoft where they give us the operating systems at a low cost, and that's how come we can afford to refurbish 14,000 computers. But there are computers that go overseas that have Linux-based operating systems on them. But for our purposes, we really want to make sure that we prepare the community members to be competitive and be able to get into college. So we put a Microsoft Windows 2000 Pro on the machines. That's the last load, and this coming load will have that. It's our hope that we'll get enough donations in that we'll be able to up that and have faster hardware, but we haven't been seeing that sort of material come through our door yet.
All right. And Josh,
can I add one more piece to that?
Please. We can't hear you. I think the connection with Josh is actually causing the issue with Skype and being involved. Josh, I want to say thank you very much for joining us. I'm going to say goodbye to you, and we actually have a call we're going to take in a minute anyway where we'd have to say goodbye to you. So, Josh, thank you so much.
Okay.
And I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Okay.
Matthew, you wanted to add something to that? What were you saying?
Yeah, and maybe this has already been spoken about, but in addition to the Spanish operating system, which is loaded up in Oregon, in Guatemala, we load them with additional software that's in Spanish to various software programs to learn geography, math, science. And then in addition, we've recently teamed up with an NGO in Guatemala that is developing Quiche Mayan software, which is software to learn the language, the Quiche Mayan language, which is actually saving a lot of villages. And then in addition, we also have another program that we've installed at the Mayan Culture Program, the compilation of the history, the architecture, the mathematics, and the calendar of the Mayans. So the computers are actually being used not only to gain skills in basic computer use, but also to cultural skills and actually the language that's being lost.
This Mayan cultural investment is a Guatemalan federal program, correct?
It's not. It's been developed by bilingual Guatemalan teachers.
Oh.
And it's actually funded by grants from the U.S. government as well as the Canadian government.
Oh, nice.
So it's a Guatemalan-based NGO. And Guatemalan bilingual teachers have developed the software, and it's designed for kids to learn Quiche because of its dating in various communities.
How strong is your Mayan?
I've picked up a few words and expressions along the way. It's a beautiful language, and I love whenever I have a chance to pick up a word or two. I'm always asking.
And I'm assuming your Spanish is quite good at this point.
Yeah, it's
super good.
It's good enough.
Now, Matthew, I'm assuming that a lot of what you do, I mean, besides setting up the infrastructure and setting up the computers and making sure the community is ready, all 30 of these communities so far and more growing, is ready for teaching curriculum, you have got to teach a teacher there how to teach the technology, correct?
Well, I was talking about the long list of requisites. that a community has, one of those requisites is the community is actually responsible to get a teacher that will teach, you know, the computer classes. And believe it or not, I mean, Guatemala's got a lot going on for itself, and it's already pretty wired in the cities. So there's a lot of Guatemalans who are technologically savvy.
Right.
They know how to fix computers, they know how to maintain computers, and they know how to teach computers. And so it's actually the responsibility of the community. So sometimes what will happen is the local governments will get involved and they'll help fund the salary of a teacher. And other times the community will rally together and throw some money in a hat and basically create a salary for a computer teacher. What we're doing is actually supporting those teachers and the communities with some basic maintenance and also basic classes on how to actually fix computers, like bad hard drives, bad CDs, things like that. So that's our piece, but it's the community's piece to attach the teacher. And believe it or not, it's not hard at all for them to find someone who's savvy and also is able to teach basic computer skills. We're also developing curriculum, and the idea is that, I mean, at this point, there isn't a national curriculum that exists, you know, for computers and teaching computers. So we're actually, we have Guatemalan teachers who are also computer teachers as well as classroom teachers working on creating a curriculum that integrates also the software that we're installing on all these computers.
We are talking with the founder of Partners of Solidarity, Matthew. He's in Nicaragua. We're also talking with Lorraine. She's in Eugene, Oregon. She's the founder of Next Step Recycling. Both these organizations are helping to reuse computers and close the digital divide in Guatemala and I'm sure other countries as things grow. We are taking calls and questions about the topic. The phone numbers are 476-2800. Again, that's 476-2800 or toll free at 1-800-655-5877. And we're going to go ahead and take a line from Aromas. Barbara, welcome to Geek Speak. Hi, Barbara.
Hello.
Hi, you're on air.
Hi. Well, thank you so much. It's wonderful to hear from Guatemala. I was down there for some time and enjoyed my Guatemalan sister's hospitality and her family. One of the daughters is a teacher in Guatemala City, and they are my own, of course. However, I noticed when we did all of our travels around the country, which was magnificent, that one of the things that Carmen told me was that the children are so needed for agricultural purposes that they have a very difficult time drawing these youngsters out and to find locations where they can have more than six students, for instance. Even six would be a great combination. I'm wondering how you're handling that, because it's the poverty level when you is immediate and apparent, and it's like the either haves and the have-nots, and they're almost right next door.
Matthew Rettman, do you want to address that?
I'd love to. The question was breaking up along the way. Could you?
Yeah. The basic question is you've got a large population of agricultural people, and the children are needed in the farm to help make the agriculture work. So how are you dealing with them leaving the schoolyard?
Yeah.
Going to the schoolyard and going to the computers versus staying and helping the family with the business.
And where is the schoolyard? That's the question I'm having.
Yeah.
Because
so is that, and where and where is the schoolyard? Do they have to travel a long way, Matthew?
I think I can address that question. I didn't quite get the whole piece, but I mean. It sounded like the question was, you know, whether or not, maybe I may not be understanding completely, but it sounded like you were wondering about whether it was worth teaching them computers.
It's more about the students, the children are needed in the farm to help the community survive. So how far do they have to travel from their homes and their fields to school? And is that impacting the business and the agriculture and the survival of these people?
Okay. Well,
I could be very wrong, too, but let's go with that.
The computers are located in the schools.
Okay.
The schools are located in the communities and the rural communities. Most of the schools we work with are actually called escuela aprobaciones, and what they are actually schools that are run by committees of parents. The government pays for the salaries of the teachers, but the community is in charge of finding a space for the actual school, and then they're also in charge of the curriculum, hiring the teachers, firing the teachers. So a lot of these communities have actually gone out of their way to work. And these are all agriculture people. These are farming people, most of whom are illiterate, believe it or not.
Yes.
Signing documents with their thumbs, and they're the ones that have organized to get schools in their communities, oftentimes, sometimes just in shacks, and eventually evolving into buildings. And these are also the same people who are realizing that in the world that we live in today, you need as many tools as you can to survive and as many opportunities as possible. And so in a country like Guatemala with a huge population, yeah, they're needed in the field, but not every single person is needed in the field. And if you want to have another option in your life, a lot of people, elders of the community, indigenous elders who don't read or write, they realize that having education is another way out and another option. And everyone doesn't have to work in a factory, or everyone doesn't have to work in the fields.
Yeah.
There are other options.
And
but really, the only way to get there is through education.
Barbara, did that answer your question, Barbara?
Well, I'm just wondering about how the what their effectiveness is in being able to reach way out there. And
when he's addressing communities, I know it's very difficult. Okay, Barbara, thank you. I think we got your question. I think we're going to let Lorraine go for this for a little while. Thank you so much, Barbara,
really
for the call.
That's great. Thank you. And I'll call you later to see how you can contact this organization, okay?
Okay, and actually the geekspeak.org website has information about contact and such.
You've
and links
got it.
To.
Thank
great.
You.
Thank you so much, Barbara.
You bet. Bye-bye.
Lorraine?
I actually visited the computer labs this last January along with a board member, our board president, and one of our stewardship council members, and I was so impressed with how many kids come to school with all of the different barriers that they're presented with. For each computer, Matthew, correct me if I'm wrong, I think there's 5 to 10 kids using one computer. Is that correct?
Well, it depends on what school it is. I mean, sometimes yeah. There's as many as 5 kids at the same time, and other times it'll be 2 or 3, depending on the class size.
Yeah, so these computers are definitely being accessed.
Yeah, and they are local.
When I was there, they were demonstrating the Mayan Quiche programs and also the anatomy and then the general this is how you type kind of thing. It was so moving.
I think it's really quite amazing that you're in a situation where you're teaching computers to kids and the skills are involved in that, you know, typing and understanding just how to use a computer, and their parents might not be literate. That's a talk about a large divide there. That's kind of impressive. And I just want to clarify that these schools, there's 30 of them so far, they're growing, and they are remote. They're in very rural communities. Sometimes the communities don't have to pay for roads.
They're all in rural communities,
yeah.
and that's our only focus. So we're not installing computers in urban areas, because in urban areas there's plenty of computers, and believe
right.
it or not, I mean, on a city street, a major city street, you'll see 4 internet cafes, on the same street. So
Now getting involved, Barbara's been to Guatemala a few times. Looks sounds like she has family in Guatemala. How do people get involved with what you're doing, Matthew?
How do I get involved with what I'm doing?
Yeah, let's say somebody wants to go to Guatemala and work in a school and help set up a school for 3 weeks or something like that. Kind of what Josh is doing for months now. How do you have people doing that with you?
Yeah, to a certain extent. I mean, for instance, right now, you know, we have several volunteers. There's a man from Japan who's living for a year in Guatemala, and he's actually hosting the maintenance and basic repair classes. The idea, though, of the project really is about sustainability, and it's also about empowerment. And so, for instance, what Josh is doing right now, he's helping to develop a pilot program to hook up internet at one of our schools. We don't have internet at this point. And so he's creating a model that then could be replicated by community leaders and teachers in various schools. And at the same time, our Shiro, who's a volunteer from Japan, he's teaching these classes that are empowering people with skills. So what our philosophy really is not that gringos or people from Japan are going to come and save the day and show them how to do everything and do all the work for them. The idea is that the communities need to take responsibility, and one of the ways you have to do that is actually to learn certain skills, like how do you clean a computer when it's dusty, and how do you replace a hard drive when it blows out on you. So those are the kind of things that we're doing with volunteers, is getting people who are interested in being around for a while and also working on an empowerment piece where they can actually teach skills that will then be used by the communities to maintain these labs, because no one else is going to do it for them.
That's great. Well, thank you, Matthew, very much. And Lorraine, how do people get involved with Next Step recycling? How do they start recycling and such?
Oh, well, if you're local to Eugene, Oregon, come on down. We'll use your hands anytime you want to come. We actually have folks that come from as far as 2 hours away to come volunteer with us.
Mm-hmm.
They spend the whole day with us. But if you want to make a donation, you can ship it to us. Make sure you wrap it and mark it fragile. The donation itself, the shipping fee, they are tax deductible. We are a 501c3 nonprofit. Of course, you need to talk to your tax advisor, but that shipping cost should also be considered tax deductible.
Okay.
We have we receive everything from a single cell phone to entire truckloads of technology from businesses, so there's no limit to what we can accept, and we'll take anything electronic,
now,
working or not.
I'm assuming you also take donations of funding, and can you help get the money to Partners of Solidarity directly, or how's the best way for people to donate if they want to donate money?
There's a piece that neither Matthew or I said. Partners in Solidarity was its own 501c3 nonprofit under the umbrella of another nonprofit. That nonprofit folded, and we absorbed the Partners in Solidarity program.
So
completely.
They're kind of under your 501c. Okay, great.
Yeah.
So if
and
you
so
want,
if you make a donation to Partners in Solidarity, we will put it right in there.
Right.
We have a separate bank account for
so
them.
So pretty much, you can go everything. All the donations and beginning involvement and stuff can go through Next Step Recycling, and that is nextsteprecycling.org, and they're in Eugene, Oregon, though they're completely international at this point. And
yep.
Lorraine and Matthew, thank you so much for starting your work up and continuing it going and helping to remove the digital divide in our world.
Well, thanks
yeah,
for,
yeah,
having,
thanks
us
for
on.
Having us on, too. Mm-hmm. And I just want to add one more thing,
please
too.
Do.
As far as getting involved in any interest in coming to Guatemala, you can visit our website as well at partnersinsolidarity.com. And also, there's an email link as well for me there. And if anyone out there is interested in coming and sharing some of their tech skills in Guatemala for long periods of time, they're very welcome to contact me.
Okay. Thank you very much. And just one other thing, computers that you accept that you actually get refurbished and not just e-wasted, if you will, you take 386 and above. What about Macintoshes? Do you take like Mac Classic or do you need something newer?
We take all computers, but the ones that we place back into the community are anything G3 and faster.
Okay.
We have lots of requests from nonprofits for G4s and G5s, so if anybody is kind of tired of them sitting under their desks, please send them on. Our biggest requested item are laptops, mostly for folks that are bed-bound or chair-bound, in wheelchairs, and we never have enough laptops, nor do we have enough laptop hard drives to run the ones that do get donated. So,
great.
For us, that's the biggest wish list item.
Thank you, Lorraine, and thank you, Matthew, for doing this. You can learn a lot of more information at geekspeak.org. Today is March 22nd, 2008, and thank you so much for joining us today.
All right. Thank
Bye-bye.
You.
Thanks a lot.
GeekSpeak is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence and is used by permission. You just listened to another episode of GeekSpeak via our podcast. Would you do us a favor? Please go to your favorite podcasting index site, whether it be iTunes, Dig.com, Audio, or another site, and write a review or give us a vote to let others know what you think about GeekSpeak. Thanks, that'd really help us out. GeekSpeak is supported by PreownedCar.com, PreownedCar.com, where anyone can post their vehicle for sale or browse to purchase a pre-owned car from other car owners. More information available at PreownedCar.com. This is Lyle Troxell for KUSP. Thanks for listening.